Good morning, friends. We're here today in community and communion with each other, and in the company of the stone of these beautiful walls, in recognition of this land of the Chespian people and their elders, past and present and emerging, and also in the wake of the Peruvian priest, Father Gustavo Gutierrez, whose lifelong witness to a theology of liberation was called to heart and mind this week when he died. Gospel text that we hear this week is from the 10th chapter of the Gospel of Mark, and it's a powerful choice that emerges in this period of time leading up to the elections here in Turtle Island. It comes at a pivotal point of Mark's Gospel. That Gospel is the shortest and earliest of the Gospels. That Gospel has five sections. Section 1 and 5 are very short. Section 1 is in the desert, and it's all urgency. And section 5 is in the tomb, and it's all fear. Section 2 is the second section, and it's the Galilee ministry. It's got a breathtaking pace of encounter, surprise, healing, people following, healings and interactions. Section 4, which is the second last, is the awful depiction of that Roman torture, the crucifixion, horrific. The execution and torture previous to that of a Jewish man by the Roman occupiers. And section 3 is the central section, and it's in section 3 that we encounter this story that we heard today, the story of Bartimaeus, the blind man. It's a pivotal point of that gospel, a point of turn. And Jesus has been among the people, and he moves to turn to Jerusalem, to his own death. And of course he knew that, not because he was magic, but because he was politically astute. He knew what was likely to come. His followers were confused, they couldn't understand. The middle section of Mark's Gospel opens and closes with stories of blind men. The first story of the blind man is the one who was healed by a certain kind of paste. He wished to be healed, and Jesus spat into the dirt and made a paste and rubbed it on him. Almost like he's Adam, who needs a little bit of extra clay put into him. And that metaphor continues, where Jesus then says to him, "Can you see?" And he says, "I see trees walking around the place." Again, there's a little reference, perhaps, to a poetics of Eden happening. But Bartimaeus, who comes at the end of this middle section, is entirely different. The first guy is a depiction, perhaps, of coming to gradual enlightenment. Bartimaeus is already enlightened, and I love Bartimaeus. He is all immediacy. Jesus, to be really clear about this, is passing through Jericho on his way to certain death, and he is surrounded by his followers. Jesus, going through Jericho, in Mark's Gospel, meets Bartimaeus. In Luke's Gospel, he meets Zacchaeus. So clearly within the narrative tradition of this character, they understand that close to the time of culmination, of shock, something happened in the town previous to arriving in Jerusalem. And they're passing through, and in fact, they've even passed through Jericho, it seems. Intensity is building. My guess is that all the people were expecting there to be some kind of showdown, some kind of revolution, some kind of encounter, some kind of clash and conflict in Jerusalem. And were they fools for wanting that? No, of course they weren't. Who doesn't want liberation when you've been occupied by the Romans, my God? They're passing through. And how had Bartimaeus, son of Timaeus, heard about Jesus of Nazareth? Because when he figures out what the noise and commotion is, he begins shouting. And to my mind, an enormous amount of the spiritual life and an enormous amount of political life can be summed up in response to the question at the heart of this extraordinary text. The question is, what do you want? An amazing question to ask. What do you want? In conflict resolution, I think the question of what do you want is one of the most difficult things to answer, because it asks a certain kind of self-reflection. It asks both for your idealism and pragmatism to come into play. We need both. And in conflict, truthful answers to what do you want can be very complex. It might be in a situation of conflict that you go, when you're asked the question of what do you want, it might be that you say, "I want my life to improve." It might also be in a situation of conflict that a truthful answer to the question of what do you want is, I want the other person to admit they're wrong. Or I want them to lose, and I want to see them lose. Or I want my suffering to end, or I want to feel heard, or I want to watch shame descend on somebody else in public. That might be part of what you want. You might want to win, you might want to destroy, you might want to live, you might want to feel safe. You might want to see fear in the eyes of people who only ever seem to hold power in their eyes. You might want victory or vengeance or vindication. You might want an outcome that's good for everyone. You might want chaos because you might think that within chaos something new can emerge. Or you might want rest. All of these things rest underneath what it is you might want when it comes to a situation of conflict. And they're all replies. To lift the lid of desire in us when we're in a heightened state of tension, this text guides us into a reflection upon that. And you're in an election cycle right now that is absolutely doing that from the moment you wake up, if you turn on the news, and every time you explore it. There's even other sides of complexities to the question of what do you want. It might be that you want to see the other side fail. Or you might want to see your worst fears realized so that you can be proven to be right. Or you might want to see other people suffer so that you can say, I told you so. Or you might want to see somebody lose so you can say how right you were about how wrong they were in their campaigning, even if you say you wanted them to win. You might want an end to pain. You might want an end to the system. You might want less conflict or more conflict. I want my desire to be fulfilled, I think. Or I want my desire to continue. All of these things are present. What do you want is not a straightforward question, and it's a stark invitation. To quote the gospel text properly, the question to Bartimaeus isn't only what do you want, but the question is, what do you want me to do for you? And we see in response to, in this whole text, that the character of Bartimaeus is revealed. You know, by the roadside, the crowd is busy going to Jerusalem, and he, the single roadside man, manages to waylay an entire crowd, shouting, Jesus, Son of David, have mercy on me. Did he want mercy, or did he want attention? I think it might be more likely the latter. He wanted attention, and he was certainly capable of grasping it. And what's so interesting in response to this question, and in reflection on the question of what do you want, is the crowd's response, because the crowd, it says here in the text, many sternly ordered him to be quiet. It seems that the crowd thought that they knew what Jesus of Nazareth wanted, and therefore they were the self-appointed police upon their assumption of what it is that they thought he wanted. And based on their fantasy about what they thought their authority wanted, they were willing to be stern and cruel and shut somebody up who was in their own place of habitation. Look at what it is we do when we think we have confidence to know what the person that we're following wants, when we think we know what they want. Fascinating and complicated. These are urgencies at the heart of desire, when we assume that we understand the desire of somebody else and therefore become desire's protectors, the master's Rottweilers, ready to act on what it is that I need them to want in order to justify what I actually want to do, which is to be cruel. Interestingly, Bartimaeus isn't intimidated. He just continues to make noise. I admire him so much. The artistry of Mark's writing is demonstrated here, because there's frenzy. He and his disciples and a large crowd, and they're leaving Jericho, and they're going into the politically explosive Jerusalem. Everybody knows it. And then the scene strangely comes to quiet right in the middle of that madness, because the scene says, Jesus stood still and said. And I'd like to be still just in that small fraction of the sentence. Somebody who's capable of standing still in the middle of a crowd, and Jesus was no fool. Of course he knew that the ravenous desire of his crowd was likely to cause conflict in them, even though they were his followers. They wanted a showdown and a revolution, and he was not prepared to satisfy their desire. And here they were enacting the desire they wanted. If they couldn't get rid of the Roman Empire, well, then they'd tell a blind guy by the roadside to shut up. Look at what we're willing to do in the name of having a proxy for our hostile desires. And standing still in the midst of the crowd, Jesus of Nazareth's critique was not towards Bartimaeus. It was, in a certain sense, giving him pause to distance himself from the ones who were around him, to create some independence for himself around a group of people who were communicating clearly to him what they needed him to want. And he was beginning to foretell some of the ways that he would frustrate them. To discern what you want around a crowd, to discern what's calling for your own attention, and to be capable of diverting yourself from a sense of direction that you're being forced on. This is, I think, what public integrity looks like. It is a way of not manipulating or being manipulated by crowds and the hostile, undying ways that we know that rage foments and ferments and builds and builds. Jesus says to call Bartimaeus. What's so interesting is that you see the conversion of the crowd. Bartimaeus, in a certain sense, is already healed. He's so filled with his own integrity and brilliance and clarity. It's the crowd's change, because the crowd have gone from, shut up, stop talking. We know what he wants and we're telling you what he wants. Suddenly the crowd say, take heart, get up, he's calling you. What an interesting thing we see here about the nature of crowd. There is group intelligence in this particular depiction of crowd. I'd like to be reminded more of that in public life these days. Lots of people say, well, I can't change my mind in public because my followers won't take it. This is a different kind of group intelligence that you see in the leadership style of Jesus of Nazareth. Somebody who is capable of standing still, re-examining his own agenda and thinking, let me show what leadership looks like. I wonder what the tone of his questions to Bartimaeus was when he said, what do you want me to do for you? I'm guessing it was a mixture of curiosity and exhausting. Bartimaeus is as exuberant as he's always been. You know, the crowds say to him that Jesus is calling him, and we hear the narrator of Mark say this about Bartimaeus. So throwing off his cloak, he sprang up and came to Jesus. He's led by his desire. He's absolutely clear. He knows where he's going. He needs nobody to guide him. A friend of mine who's blind says that he hates so many of the depictions of blind people in the Gospels because it's used as a metaphor for ignorance. And what we see here in Bartimaeus is that he too isn't the focus. Bartimaeus is guided with the insight that he already has before some miraculous cure goes on. It's the crowd who are led by their own ignorance and assumption and their willingness to do hostile things in the name of somebody that they want to be hostile, who is going to frustrate them and lead them in a different kind of a way. What comes after desire? More desire. Our lives are going to be filled with desire. Desire and desire and desire and want and want. I'm curious as to what Jesus of Nazareth wanted in this text. What do I think he wanted? He probably wanted an end to the occupation by the Romans too. Who wouldn't? They were brutal. He probably wanted the people who followed him to not act like fools, armed fools, instead to have a deeper relationship with their own want. To ask him questions and to be willing to tell him the truth about what they thought. I'm guessing he wanted people to be as present to their own desire as Bartimaeus was to his. I'm guessing he didn't want to suffer. Who would? I'm guessing he didn't want to be executed or tortured. Only the chapter before, he's been in Capernaum in what probably is his house, and when his followers have been fighting, he takes a child and sets it among them and says to them, look at this child. I'm guessing it was his own child. I'm guessing he wanted to be with his own children, with his own family. He wanted the impossible, probably most of us do, to not live in the kind of world that we live in that is so addicted to violence upon violence upon violence. He wanted what he couldn't have. And even though I'm guessing he probably knew he couldn't get it, he still was willing to live in a way that created the kind of desires that could guide rather than lead us to death. he wanted, in the middle of all of that desire too, all those huge desires, to be capable of being interrupted. We see that so often in him. He was capable of being interrupted. And that desire guided him towards curiosity. Jesus of Nazareth was skilled at holding his desire in a way that did not conform to the desires piled upon him, whether by his enemies or by his followers. It is difficult in situations of leadership to maintain that kind of integrity and independence, but we see it demonstrated over and over again. Whoever all of us are, may we be the kind of people who are able to hold still in the midst of that kind of ravenous desire, your own and other people's, and find the courage to face our desire and to resist the kind of desire that will destroy. What happens next in this text is that they arrive in Jerusalem. And before they arrive, people put their cloaks on the ground and lead him in on a donkey. He entered then Jerusalem. He goes to the temple. It's empty. He looks at everything and he stays with his friends. In the midst of rising drama, rising threat, we see the writer of the Gospel of Mark depict somebody who was desperately seeking moments where he can be present to what will truly guide him according to integrity. He contained his own desire, and may we do the same.